Good morning. This is Chaz Kangas from Go95.3 and Go96.3 in Minneapolis, as well as chazkangas.bandcamp.com for all your hip-hop needs. And you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. Thank you for confirming with me that too much scrolling is just enough. I'll see you in the future.
Too Much Scrolling for February 27th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflower.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. It's Oscar week. It's time for the Academy Awards this weekend. So we have Kyle Hickman, our movie expert, in. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, gentlemen. So glad to be here.
That explains why we're all dressed in tuxedos.
I'm usually dressed in a tuxedo. Have I ever told you my tuxedo story? I ordered a tuxedo from eBay, and it came in a bag that was 8.5 by 11. And I went, this is going to be very wrinkly when I take it out of this bag. It was.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're all dressed in tuxedos. In fact, we've laid down a red carpet. So this is going to be an exciting show, Steve.
That's just a Kool-Aid stain that the kids left.
Oh, well, there you go.
Welcome to the basement.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. All three of us yesterday got a chance to see Annihilation. This is the new science fiction-y film that came out starring Natalie Portman and Oscar Isaac. That's all I know about it.
All right, so first thing we need to do is ask Kyle, does he have a shimmer of an idea of what this movie is actually about?
I see what you did there with the shimmer.
Thank you.
Not really. I've been Googling. I've been looking up as much as I can. I understand it's about alien, something alien, but it isn't necessarily extraterrestrial, taking over potentially. And then there's mimicking humans. There's just a lot going on.
It stars Princess Amidala.
And Poe. And so all of my fan fiction where Princess Amidala and Poe get together, it's now ruined.
Well, that's interesting because her husband... the guy that doesn't like sand and thinks it's coarse. He wasn't at all in this movie, Steve.
That's surprising.
Well, anyway, Princess Amidala works for Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And she's
a biologist.
She's a biologist. And somehow her husband is in the military and has gone on a military type of expedition into this.
Area X is the name of it.
And it's in the southern part of California, maybe. They call it the Southern Zone.
I don't know if it's East Coast or West Coast. In my head, it was East Coast.
I do too. It doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter.
The point is this thing landed in this lighthouse. Mm-hmm. It's created this area that continues to expand across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And
anybody who goes into it does not come back.
There you go.
Except for Poe, who comes back, but it's not him. It's something else.
Well,
dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
This is based on the books, the Southern Reach trilogy by Jeff Vandermeer that I read back in 2014. I didn't like the books very much. It's part of something called the New Weird movement of novels. The idea is this is a very weird situation that the author is making a weird situation and leaving it at that weird situation. Whether or not there's anything to this story is really a question of what we, the audience, bring to it.
Well, and there's a good point to it. We enter the Shimmer mm-hmm. with our team of scientists, mm-hmm. and they go through it, and they basically discover things. The first thing we should say is that once you've entered the Shimmer, the next moment we don't know what happened. A couple of weeks went by, maybe.
It's 3 or 4 days, and they understand that it's been 3 or 4 days because they count their food,
okay.
and they see that the food that they had with them the last moment they remember is now 3 days depleted.
And we also get some flashbacks of potential things that happen in the past
mm-hmm.
That are supposed to give us revelations, but there really is no revelation.
I agree.
Other than... potentially, I'm going for potential. Potentially learn that where the scientists looked like they had a happy marriage and everything was perfect, we find out she had an affair,
mm-hmm.
which I initially didn't really put anything together. But that could have led the husband to potentially have found out about it and continue to take escalating riskier and riskier military operations. Mm-hmm. Like, and the Shimmer would have been a military operation. That potentially could just be me reading into it, because there's so much left to just interpretation. Mm-hmm. There's Chip, go ahead for it.
Chip, I think that's what... I think you're spot on. Early on in the film, I think that's what they were trying to do. I noticed there's an early scene with Natalie Portman and the other professor, Johns Hopkins, and he asks her to come over for a party on Saturday and kind of touches her elbow. It's very subtle, but I think the filmmaker is trying to help you understand there might have been something that happened before that, and it's only until later you realize, all right, that was a loaded elbow touch based on their previous affair.
So do you believe that all of the other activity of this story is just some sort of dream, and the theme of improprieties in marriage is the message of this movie?
I honestly do not know at this point. I think it's about, there's definitely a piece about adultery and relationships, but I think it gets into a much deeper idea of sci-fi and how we understand our universe. And like I said, I'm still trying to figure it out. I Googled for probably 20 minutes trying to figure out the 3 to 4 day missing window when they first walk into the Shimmer, because no one's really clear what happened there.
And there's never an explanation.
My hypothesis as the movie went on, I was thinking in the back of my head, did they already make it to the lighthouse in those first 3 or 4 days, and now they're backtracking, but now they're going back again because something messed with their memory? I don't know. It's a perplexing film in so many ways.
And it's never answered.
Well, everybody has their own baggage they brought in there. Mm-hmm. And we got an insight into Natalie Portman's baggage, which was not just revealed to us. It just, it was some flashbacks in here and there. And then we there's a scene where they're going across some water, and one of the people kind of lays out what everybody else's baggage is. Why are they here? Why are they taking this risky operation that they may not return from? And
that's never paid off.
And like I said, I don't know if the purpose of this is to, that you just basically, you read into it however you want to read into it.
I believe that this is all just a movie about cancer. Starting from the very first scene where Natalie Portman is explaining the splitting of cells. Oh, and by the way, these cells happen to be cancer cells. And the word cancer is used 3 or 4 more times. This is a cancer, a blight upon the land. I think that's the only theme I can find.
All right. So
agreed.
On my 100-point scale, I'm going to say 40. 40 out of 100.
I would have a hard time recommending this to anybody, even my sci-fi fans. How about you, Kyle?
I'm going to give it a little bit higher of a score. If it was going on the 100 scale, I'd give it about a 70, just because I like it that it's not streamlining a direct purpose to you. It gives you something to analyze and try to figure out. But I will say, Steve, I agree with you on the cancer piece, because the character, the doctor, Ventress, it's obviously alluded to that she has cancer. And then at the end, without any significant spoilers, she's the reason a lot of the chaos occurs. Mm-hmm. And as I started to read some more online, they talked a lot about the idea of the cancer in the system of this new organism type of deal. So I think you're onto something there.
That's the only thing I could really find as a theme to any of it, because it is just a beautiful mess, is what some of the reviewers have said. It's interesting, but I don't know why.
There you go. It makes us think about it. There you go.
And it has done that. Here we are a day later. We are still trying to figure it out. So there you go. Maybe it's just a theater of the absurd, just an unsolvable maze that is life. You saw a documentary called Icarus. Tell us all about that one.
Well, I was preparing for our Oscar show, and I was looking at some of the movies I had not seen. And many of them are available right now, but you have to buy them. And I either rent them or want to watch them streaming somewhere.
You'll wait.
Exactly. So, but there was one that was a documentary that is being nominated for the best documentary. It's playing on Netflix. It was released on Netflix, and it's called Icarus, and it is about the doping that happened with Lance Armstrong, and sort of the review of that ultimately led to a revelation into the Olympic scandal that kept the Russians from participating under the Russian flag. And then the result of that, they still were finding those Russians who are competing in the Olympics under the Olympic flag. There were still two more that were caught doping.
Mm-hmm.
This is about the doping of athletes. And this Russian guy who sort of is the leader of that. It's they describe it as a thriller involving dirty urine, Steve.
There you go.
So there you go. I found it interesting. I don't necessarily think everybody needs to watch it. But the question I that you're left with is, for athletes, is it so important that they have to compete cleanly? That they can't use performance-enhancing drugs to perform? I can't answer that.
It's a question that I've been asking for a long time.
Well, I mean, what it could do to them. Think about how we look at the NFL now with mm-hmm. some of the crippled players after they leave. Is this reasonable or not? I don't know.
Is it okay to allow people to make those decisions for themselves? If they know the consequences, is it okay to have people do their best? And if that's what it takes, is that okay?
One of the biggest insights I got from it was that the gentleman was a former Soviet citizen, and he's a Russian citizen now. And 1984, George Orwell was banned during his time, and there's a really nice scene where he's reading 1984 and describing, you know, basically his past and the use of that as a manual. Mm-hmm. Very, very fascinating. Did you see this at all, Kyle?
I did not, but it sounds fascinating.
What have you been watching?
I did check out the Oscar shorts that are nominated, both the animation and live shorts. And just trying to catch some one-off movies here and there before the Oscars happen next weekend. So, but I haven't really dug into the documentary and really the foreign film side, and I'm a little disappointed in myself.
Now, you did see the movie My Friend Dahmer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
So I think everybody knows the story of Jeffrey Dahmer, infamous, killed almost 20 people, young men, dismembered, infamous cannibal who was also infamously killed by another inmate. But I think very few people know about his story behind the scenes and what it was like to grow up with Dahmer. And so I haven't read the book, but I know, Chip, you guys mentioned that there was a book written that was kind of the basis for this film in 2012.
Dirk McDurk.
This is a graphic novel written by Durf Backdurf. That's a great name.
I went into it, kind of a blank slate because I hadn't read the book. And I have my own ideas of what, someone who could do such heinous things would be like in their adolescence. And I have to say, after watching the film, a lot of those were confirmed. You see a lot of the same symptoms you normally would. But really what you saw was a young teenager just trying to fit in and figure out things in a tough family life, right? And so you get the human side of Jeffrey Dahmer as to what might have led him to come to that point. So what's fascinating about the film is it doesn't profile any of the murders, right? It takes you all the way up to the point to where he meets the gentleman who he ends up becoming his first victim, right? But it starts a few years before that, profiles his family, profiles how he's trying to fit in school, and gives you little glimpses into some of the behaviors that you would normally see with serial killers and folks like that. So I thought it was extremely fascinating, and well worth the 2 hours.
All right, we got some movies coming out this week, Steve. They look pretty good.
Yeah, there's some good movies coming out this week. Red Sparrow is the story of a Russian intelligence officer who happens to be a very attractive woman who then goes on to destroy all sorts of action-adventure sort of tropes.
This stars Mystique, doesn't it, from the X-Men?
Yes. That's Jennifer Lawrence, yes.
Yes, J-Law. Mystique, as we like to call her. Anyway, this looks really good. In this movie, I think she's playing Black Widow, Steve.
No, I think Red Sparrow and Black Widow are two different adjectives and animals, and you're confusing the two.
All right, so this is based on a book written by a former CIA person. It's a Red Sparrow trilogy, and they are training their spies, the women.
And supposedly, this is based on some facts of what's happening in the real world.
Exactly. And so they're basically ladies sent out to provide information.
Reminds me of the Angelina Jolie Salt movie, which is a very similar plot.
Okay, so sort of KGB version, finishing school to create spies.
Yeah.
This looks really good.
What do you think, Kyle?
I'm looking forward to it. I saw the Red Band trailer probably 4 or 5 months ago, and since then, it's been on the list.
There you go.
So I think you guys are spot on.
There is a remake of Death Wish, the 1974 Charles Bronson classic, is being remade.
We've been asking for this.
With the action hero of the day, Bruce Willis.
Well, Bruce may show up for this film.
He might. This might be Bruce Willis from Die Hard, not Bruce Willis from Cop Out.
So this
everyone loves a little Bruce Willie.
Bruno. Remember Bruno. When he used to call himself Bruno?
There's going to be some singing later on.
Oh, geez.
All right, so this takes place in Chicago. So for all of our Chicago listeners, there you go.
There you go.
And then he's a doctor, Steve. I don't know if Charles Bronson was a doctor in the original one.
I honestly don't remember, but I can't imagine going to Dr. Bronson. hey, Pally, I got to tell you.
Anyway, so this is it's a vigilante film, Steve.
Yes.
Starring Bruce Willis.
There you go. No Jeff Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum was in the 1974 version as Freak Number One, and there's no Jeff Goldblum in this film, so therefore it loses one star already.
All right, so my daughter loved Romeo and Juliet.
I like that one.
To the point that we had to buy a disc because sure. she kept renting it. And I think we rented it like 8 or 9 times. And it was because of all these Elton John films. But we've got the follow-up, Steve.
There you go. This one is called Gnome Alone. Get it? Gnome Alone.
Yeah, I don't get it.
It's a sequel to Romeo and Juliet. All of your garden gnomes are alive, and they're doing fun things when you're not looking. This has nothing to do with Toy Story.
So think of those little gnomes that go in your garden, and then
Or other people's gardens, as the case may be.
Put some dancing butt cheeks in there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And, of course, little kids are going to find it giggly fun.
And I don't think it has Elton John music like the original, but the original had that musical element. This should probably be an interesting family film.
All right,
Kyle.
I'm
going to
go on a protest kick here for both of the for Death Wish and Romeo and Juliet for two different reasons. Number one, Death Wish. I agree. If Jeff Goldblum's not in it, and he was in the original, I have no interest in seeing it. In fact, I'm going to protest that anyone sees it because Jeff Goldblum is the keeper of all that is great. So that is number one. Number two. Growing up in the 90s as a Goosebumps fan, where there was a book about killer gnomes,
right.
Revenge of the Gnomes,
right.
I am forever scarred and will not watch any of these gnome movies because I don't want to be associated with. They might be nice now, but there is a path where those gnomes follow to evil.
There you go.
It has to happen.
There you go.
You heard it first.
There's your movies of the week, some of which Kyle will see.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. And Chip, you found this. This is very interesting. The book is called Make Your Bed, Little Things That Can Change Your Life and Maybe the World. This is by William H. McRaven.
Admiral
William H. McRaven.
Navy SEAL.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is based on his commencement speech from 2014 at the University of Texas, where he attended college. And basically, he's talking to the young people and saying, go out and change the world. And it all starts, what he thinks, is making your bed in the morning.
Hmm.
And kind of sets you up, because life happens out there. Failures happen all the time, and how you react to those failures, how you work with adversity, can be whether you can be a successful human or not, one of the determining factors. But even if everything went bad a certain day, when you get back home, if the bed is made, you've accomplished one thing during the day.
And you can feel good about that at least. I like this message very much. I watched this commencement. It's in our show notes. You can watch this commencement speech. It is a good speech.
Well, it's a wonderful, for as we get older,
mm-hmm.
not that we forget things, but sometimes we need someone to tell you about things.
I sometimes forget things.
Well, he references his Navy SEAL training quite a bit, and what they put their recruits through in order to become a Navy SEAL. You can give up any time you want to. You just have to ring a bell.
Mm-hmm.
And his last piece of advice is never ring that bell.
Yeah.
The other thing,
and using that as an analogy to life, all of those trainings that he had in that moment, that is life, and mirroring that to what you are doing. Never give up. Never ring that bell.
How to work as a team. Yeah. You know, what to do when things are not going well. You know, there's a part of this speech where he says that they're in mud, probably up to their
heads. They're okay. Only had their heads sticking out of the mud.
They're cold.
Ice cold mud.
They're miserable. Mm-hmm. And they've got a drill sergeant right outside saying, listen, if five people give up, we can stop this right now. Mm-hmm. And the response to that was to start singing.
Yep. One guy started singing and the rest of them joined in. It's a great story.
And so it talks about the impact you can have around the people around you, how you can inspire the people around you when you're all ready to give up and you're working on a goal. Mm-hmm. And if you see that there is, you know, the ring or whatever you're trying to get in front of you, things that you can do to put yourself in a better position to be successful. And I really love the message of it. It's very clear. It's very short. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't, the book is an expansion of this speech. But even if you decided that this book you weren't going to read, but you wanted to listen to the speech, you can go right to YouTube.
Yep.
We've got it in our notes. And you can.
It's very inspiring.
Listen. Oh, it's a wonderful, clean, quick, clear statement on what you can do to live a better life and impact others.
I have no idea who the commencement speaker was at my college graduation, but my sister's college graduation, it was Mr. Rogers.
There you go.
Who was our commencement speaker, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. That man knew how to command respect and give empathy and show us how to be better people. I was there.
Did you call someone?
I don't know. I'd probably not.
He asked you to take a few minutes to call people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's lovely.
It's great.
It's a touching moment. Anyway, thank you, Admiral.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful reminder, and you know, 15-20 minutes that you will spend well. If you want to watch it, if you want to read it, this is wonderful
too. Kyle, are you into self-help books?
Yeah, from time to time.
Yeah.
I actually took a coaching course a couple years ago, and one of the first things my coach told me was exactly what he said. And he didn't say, you know, make sure you make your bed, but he said, find something that small that you can accomplish every morning that'll give you some energy to tackle the rest of the day. Yep. And so I've made a conscious effort to do the same, whether it's just cleaning up clothes from the night before or just even making breakfast and spending the time to do that. It makes a big difference to get the gas running.
Small accomplishments make a big difference. That's the message. That's wonderful. That one's called Make Your Bed, Little Things That Can Change Your Life and Maybe the World by Admiral William H. McRaven. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Our guest today is Kyle Hickman. To suggest that Kyle is a movie fan is an understatement. He watched 150 films in 2016. He is an avid movie fan who loves to attend the local theater. He writes about a number of topics on his blog, kylehickman.blogspot.com. You can find a link to his work in our show notes. And Kyle, you are in an airport taking your time to talk to us about the Oscars today.
Yep, so pardon me if you hear any ominous voices in the background talking about what's going on.
All right, so let's start off how to watch the Oscars. You can watch it on ABC
next Sunday.
All right, on mm-hmm. Sunday, and then you also there's the app you can go to also, and there's a few other places to see the red carpet and stuff. So you can click through our notes and you can see that.
So what is it that interests you about the movies of the year this year, Kyle?
Say a few things. Number one, I think the best picture category is completely up in the air. Although Three Billboards has been sweeping the award season so far, I think there's some controversy behind it in terms of what the critics say. And I know the Oscars and the Academy has been sensitive to controversy and criticism over the past few years. So I'm interested to see if they follow the path or if they go with one of the other top movies there. And then on the side of that, too, I'm just looking forward to seeing what the social commentary looks like and then the general reaction by all of humanity to that social commentary.
Because the last few years, the Oscars have been full of all sorts of political statements and has overshadowed some of the celebration.
Yep. And you're going to see the Me Too movement in heavy force next Sunday. And so that's to be expected. And after the Golden Globes, there was a lot of criticism that the men there said nothing about the Me Too movement. So I think you'll see some men start to speak up this time, because but just of the virtue of seeing the backlash from the Golden Globes interaction on social media. So I'm looking forward to seeing what movies are recognized, but I'm looking forward even more to just the social environment of the Oscars.
Which brings us to our question. You know, are the Oscar awards the best way to determine a film's importance? And if so, you know, how?
To a certain extent, yes. I think this is just my humble opinion, IMO. I think the Oscars does a good job of finding some of those films that are groundbreaking, that have incredible performances. But what is important, I think, is subjective, depending on the person, right? And what their perspective is, and why movies are important to them, and what content they really enjoy. So I think the Oscars does a good job of identifying true art, and who are the artists who really brought things to life for the rest of us to see. But if you start and end with just the Oscars nomination list, I think ultimately you may miss out on some films that could be really life-changing or give you a new perspective on your life, right?
Like, can you give us some examples of some of those movies that maybe aren't on the top nine list but are great movies from 2017?
So some of the ones that I was honestly a little surprised didn't make it onto their Florida Project. Now, that film is nominated for some other portions, some other categories. Mm-hmm. But that was a reflection on life in Florida outside of Disney World. And it was very much almost documentary style. And there was it got a lot of fantastic reviews. And you could call it a snub that it didn't get into the top nine. Killing of a Sacred Deer was another one from this past year that I don't think had a wide appeal, but I feel like Colin Farrell keeps making these films that are just very odd and plays these very,
unusual,
weird characters. The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer. He just plays socially awkward humans.
Oh, the Lobster was far too weird.
I love The Lobster. Was a very weird concept, but again, I have to admit my bias. I love weird concepts and challenging the form, which is also why I'm a huge Bo Burnham fan in life.
Gotcha.
But I think there are, you see Killing a Sacred Deer, you see a Florida Project, you see, honestly, and I was reading a tweet yesterday about this, I think Coco is one of the best films of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'll agree. An animated film, it pops into this separate category. It doesn't get the recognition it deserves in the best film category. And so that person was talking about cultural gatekeepers. I don't know if that's necessarily the term I would use, but if I had my pick, I would put Coco in that top three or four category because I felt every emotion watching Coco, from joy to sadness to just appreciating family. And it was just an all-around emotional experience from start to finish. And I've heard nothing but the same from other people who went.
How should a viewer use the nominees, the list, to pick future films to watch?
I know there are a lot of casual moviegoers out there who look forward to the Oscars as that time of year when they're like, all right, what did I miss? What do I need to see? And so the nominations came out about a month and a half ago.
Sure.
And so I assume some people have been using that top nine best picture list and going down that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great place to start. But like I said, do your research, look online, look at some Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb. There are a lot of really good films that aren't on those lists just because not everybody can be nominated. And I think that ultimately it comes down to what are you interested in, right? Like foreign films, that's probably a great place to start to understand foreign films. But every country has their own variety of additional films that aren't going to be recognized by the Academy.
And their own voice. That's
exactly.
British films really, well, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say all British films, but many of them want to, the BBC has said, we want to spread Britishness around the world. And, you know, a film from Australia may have a totally different view. And then think of any other country.
And Hollywood might not be representative of the United States. That voice is a singular voice sometimes.
Well, and you think of like Bollywood. Think of how many good films come out of Bollywood. Yeah. And you don't really see that recognition here. So I think it's understanding the Academy is really focused on American-centric films with a lot of, you know, international actors. And you think Gary Oldman is likely going to win Best Actor, and he is not American, right?
Sure.
So it's a very particular point of view, and that's completely okay. But if people are wanting to branch out and really experience what 2017 had to offer, the Oscars is a starting point, but it's not the end point.
So if Gary Oldman wins, do they give him just a big golden cigar?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His nicotine poisoning.
To help with his health issues that he experienced by becoming Winston Churchill.
Living the Winston Churchill life.
Those of you who haven't heard this story yet, Gary Oldman was hospitalized with nicotine poisoning filming The Darkest Hour because Winston Churchill smoked so much that the actor portraying him got sick.
No human should live that life, Steve.
Every time Gary Oldman hears another take, he has PTSD at this point.
So, are there going to be any surprises? Is there going to be a surprise winner? Can you speculate? Can you guess for us how this is going to go?
Oh, the speculation side, that's a tough one. What I will say is I can give you a hopeful nomination that I hope wins. And so I correlate this back to last year. Viggo Mortensen was in a film called Captain Fantastic. It was one of my favorite films of the year.
Didn't
get nominated. You guys loved it?
I loved it. I don't think, Chip, you didn't see it. I have not seen it. It was so touching, especially as a father, talking about how you raise your children and the choices you make. Captain Fantastic was very touching.
Yep. It's very similar to Black Panther in that I know you guys are like, what do you mean it's similar to Black Panther?
I was going
to
ask.
It's in Wakanda. Right? It takes place in Wakanda.
Where's this going, Kyle? It's similar from the idea of just ethical decision-making and ethical responsibility, mm-hmm. right? For Viggo's character in that film, it was about how should you raise your kids? Do you raise your kids how society says you should? You know, should they be educated at home or in a public school? And he was challenging all of what society told him. I love the film. I thought it should have been nominated for Best Picture. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. But he was nominated for a Best Actor. He didn't win, but I was rooting for him the whole way. Now, the analogy I give for this year is one of my favorite movies. Again, A Florida Project. Willem Dafoe plays the hotel manager in A Florida Project. And while Sam Rockwell will likely win that category, I'm hopeful that it's at least close, that Willem at least gets some consideration in that category, because he was really, really good in that film. But other than that, I think I don't anticipate a ton of surprises, right? If you look at the animated shorts, Pixar put in another animated short, and it's pretty much a shoo-in at this point that they're going to win that, just because it's not even fair for everybody else. Even though there are some great shorts in there, there's one called Garden Party that is dark, features frogs, and it does not go how you think it's going to go. And there's a reimagining of a number of fairy tales that are all combined into one universe that is also dark and fantastic. But they will all lose to Disney Pixar, I'm 100% sure enough. So Coco will probably win Best Animated Film. And so I don't anticipate a lot of surprises, but like I said, the Best Picture category, I think, is the one that is completely up in the air, and I'm really interested to see what happens.
Well, in fact, you gave us a trailer to watch for a short called The 11 O'Clock that looks fascinating. We watched the trailer, but I tried to go online to see if I could find this 13-minute short, and I couldn't find it. But anyway, tell us a little bit about this short and why you said it was important.
So I'll start with this. That category, the live shorts, the reason I've seen it is because there are theaters in my area that will show the shorts in hour and a half block, right? And so I use the movie pass, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, go in, check it out, and you get to see all of them in sequence and a few extras that may pop in to fill time. But that category in general, from a social commentary perspective, is fantastic. I know a lot of people aren't going to get a chance to see the rest of them, but there's commentary on relations between Christians and Muslims in Africa. There's conversations about gun control. The first one's it was so timely given the conversations going on in our country right now, but it was about a young man, a true story, who went into a school with a gun and the woman who had to essentially talk him out of doing harm to others and to himself. So extremely powerful category. And then you get to the second to last one, the 11 o'clock, and it's a complete turn to a different direction. It's a combination of humor and just surprise twist endings, but it's about a psychiatrist who has an 11 o'clock appointment, and his appointment is someone who thinks he is a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And so the short is this back and forth between the two of them, of one being a psychiatrist and one thinking they are, and them battling out of who's going to administer the test, who's actually the one on the wall, whose receptionist is it. And it's all additionally confusing because there's a temp receptionist that day. So that throws something in the loop because she has no idea what's going on because she's just showed up for a couple hours to fill it. It is really funny and well acted. And it's just something that I thought it was extremely creative and worth at least for you two to see, because I think you two would enjoy it.
I think we would. We have to seek it out. And it's challenging to find those shorts, unfortunately. If you don't have a theater near you that is showing them, I don't know how we get access to those.
All right, to give additional kudos to Kyle here, let's talk briefly about, we've got some of the awards, and Best Picture Award. So of the nominations, Steve has seen, how many, Steve?
I saw one of the Best Picture nominees. I saw Get Out. So, and I think the only reason I saw it is because it was released before December. I think that's the problem, is all these great movies are released in December, and I only get to see a limited number of them.
No, I got to see 5 of 9, which
that's
I think
good.
That's pretty good. That's the and in fact, I looked...
Silver medal.
Well, I looked for the other ones, but right now, they're not streaming unless you buy them. So I wasn't going
to. Willing to buy them.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Kyle is seeing 9 of 9.
The gold medal goes to Kyle Hickman for seeing all 9 of the Best Picture nominees this year.
And if you all please rise, we'll play the national anthem for him.
I'll wait for that medal in the mail next week.
It's all gold.
Sounds good to me.
Of course. So let's introduce all 9 of them real quickly, briefly. And anyway,
give us a little score, Kyle, because you've seen these and we haven't. Call Me by Your Name. Tell me a score.
Probably give that about, if I was going to do a 1 to 10 scale, because that's the life I usually live, I'd give it a 7.5.
Darkest Hour.
7.5.
Dunkirk.
8.
Get Out.
9.
No, Get Out. I meant, no, I'm just kidding. Lady Bird.
8.5.
Phantom Thread.
8.5.
The Post.
6.5.
The Shape of Water.
9.
3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
8.5.
So The Shape of Water is the one you think is probably the most significant of the films this year.
I think it's a 3-horse race.
Okay.
Like I mentioned earlier, 3 Billboards is the one that's been taking all the awards, the Golden Globes, BAFTA, and those pieces. But like I said, there's some controversy in terms of the plot and some of the racism elements that are built into the plot. There's been a lot of controversy there, so I'm interested to see what happens. But I think the other two that are going to compete are Lady Bird and Shape of Water. Phantom Thread, I think, is kind of that fourth right there. Mm-hmm. And I know Call Me by Your Name has been a kind of a cultural experience for a lot of people. But I personally think it's a little overrated. So I think it's those three, Lady Bird, Shape of Water, 3 Billboards. If the Academy chooses not to go with 3 Billboards, I think it's going to be Lady Bird.
Hmm.
Greta Gerwig telling almost her true life story. Very powerful film. I think that'll be the one. If I had to pick, I would probably go Shape of Water, but I also don't have a vote.
Okay.
So it's not really my call to make.
Any other categories we want to go over?
I will say Allison Janney will likely win Best Actress in a Supporting Role for I, Tonya. She won the Golden Globe and just was unbelievable. That whole category is full of women with crazy good at performances. Octavia Spencer was great in Shape of Water.
The one thing that we've talked about with you before is The Disaster Artist and how James Franco is not nominated for his work in The Disaster Artist here.
I'm not surprised, to be completely honest. I think he got his Golden Globe, but when it came to the Academy, I can't speculate or speak as to why he didn't get it. However, they are nominated in a couple different categories, and he probably will win the Best Adapted Screenplay.
Okay.
But again, that is pure speculation at the end of the day.
So you tweeted something this week about The Room and the fact that there was a commercial for The Room, a trailer being played before Black Panther in your theater. And this got some heat on Twitter.
Yeah, it picked up some traction. So I was sitting there I was at a Studio Movie Grill. I was ordering food. And the theater was about half full. And the ad for The Room came up. And it, again, we talked about The Room before. But The Room is... All of the trailers are really awkward. And you would think maybe with the new acclaim that Tommy and his team would create something a little bit more conventional, modern.
No, I would never think that about Tommy.
None of that, right? So I see the ad, a lot of the same lines. I'm screaming them out. My girlfriend's like got her head down because there's a bunch of people that don't know it. I'm the only one who knows who yells, "You're tearing me apart, Lisa." So that happens, and I'm like, all right, I got to get to Twitter, right? And so I start thinking, I'm like, this is a weird space. We just watched an ad for The Room before Black Panther, which is widely considered one of the most anticipated films in recent history.
Right. Sure.
So I go on Twitter, and I just pop a tweet that basically says, this is the 2018 Tommy Wiseau Envision. I tagged Tommy in it and said, ad for The Room is playing before Black Panther. So I start watching the film, put my phone away, whatever. About 45 minutes later, I noticed my phone's vibrating quite a bit. I'm like, what is going on? Who's trying to contact me? And I look, and that tweet has picked up probably about 450, 500 likes and 30 retweets. And that's not usually what happens with my tweets. So I look, and Tommy had retweeted it.
Nice.
And because of that, he's got an audience on Twitter. And the next thing you know, I spent 3 days just getting notifications of people who loved that tweet and responded to it.
So Tommy, as of this moment, it's got 3,000 likes and 350 retweets.
And Tommy quote tweeted it and gave the link to The Room and said, have you seen the movie live? And I responded with, are you kidding me? And I sent him a photo of me dressed as him outside a picture of the Disaster Artist when I went and saw the Disaster Artist live.
Nice.
For the first time. So he didn't respond to that. But I did get a bunch of texts with people saying, you're famous now, don't forget me. And that's it. And my response always was, new phone, who dis? So
you know you've made it.
It was an interesting week where now Tommy Wiseau knows I exist.
That's it.
And I can sleep a little bit more soundly.
That's awesome. So now that you're famous and you're never going to do our show ever again, can you tell us, to your loyal fans who are listening right now, how can we find out more from you?
The blog that you mentioned earlier, I will be putting out my review of the year in movies later this week. I usually post it during the weekend, so it'll probably happen either Saturday, maybe Sunday morning, just because I want to get in every last movie I can. I will group them. I will give my top 10, and then I'll group everything into about 4 or 5 different categories, from the ones that I wasted my time to these are the ones you definitely need to see. So I'll start grouping, especially films that I felt like people didn't really get the awareness of, and make sure that those are categorized appropriately. But I'm still on Snapchat, still posting movie reviews. I'm on Twitter. You can follow me at Kyle_A_Hickman. And happy to continue to catch some films and share some of my crazy thoughts on it.
So the website is kyleahickman.blogspot.com. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle.
My goodness.
And I will continue to come back if you keep inviting me.
Yes.
So don't worry about that.
All right. Even though you're huge on Twitter, we'll still hear from Kyle. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in and spending your time in a lovely airport talking to us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Always happy to do it.
And my feeling is anytime we get together, we should always be dressed in our tuxedos. That should be the way we do it.
Sounds good to me. I wear a jacket to school every day, so my tuxedo's just one step up from that.
There you go. It's Oscar.
I'm down.
It's Oscar time. That is time to dress up and have some fun. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can. If you need any more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, too, at MuchScrolling. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future.